want to sit here until half past 12, I'm all yours.
But a special word of welcome to
the guests from Agrima. You see, I've practiced this French over just before you came here, so that I don't call you agreement or something. You say Agrima. So, Akona here next to me was making sure that I pronounce it correctly and properly. Now, Chairperson, like I said to you earlier, we're going to give you, that is, Silinga, to introduce yourself and your team, and then maybe take it from there. This is your meeting, basically, to come and tell us how you spent the public funds the previous financial year, and then we can discuss from there. But the way to go is to introduce your team, give your whatever introductory statements or whatever, and then we'll take the presentation as per the slides that are in front of us. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of Parliament. My name is Fepi Silinga. I'm chairing the Agrima Board, and I'm just going to quickly ask my colleagues to introduce themselves, starting with the Chief Executive, if I may, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Joe Odhiambo. I'm the CEO of Agrima South Africa.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of Parliament, my name is Pumlani Mieni. I'm the Financial Manager of Agrima South Africa.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Karen Peterson. I am the HR Manager for Agrima.
Over to you, Greg.
Yes. Honorable Chair, as you said, Agrima is a name or a word that somewhat pronounces rather differently from how it's written, apparently in French. Agrima is celebrating its 40 years of existence. It is a very small entity, approximately about 13 staff members. It's got a board that is in its second year in my office. It has a relatively small budget of 8 million rands, and generates some fees from certification, a few hundred thousand, 700,000 or something. Our reason for existence is certification of non-standard material in the built environment. An entity perhaps slightly different from our entities in the sense that there's an agreement, an agency agreement between the Department of Public Works and CSIR with respect to discharging or execution of that mandate. So as we said here, it's an entity that is integrated with the CSIR. It's an award pretend that it's almost not alright, it's scrambled into the CSIR. And therefore its internal controls, its governance structures would be exception of the government perhaps some other structures. But it's actually reliant on the CSIR, and the CSIR provides those functions. And it has to act in terms of the policies, procedures and systems and processes. It has to act in accordance with the CSIR, and to the extent that the CSIR also got unqualified audit with a very short management letter, we are pleased to come before yourselves, honorable members, to indicate that we fall under the ambit of an unqualified audit. The Chief Executive will make the presentation, and perhaps at the moment may give particular focus to the financing and the HR issues. And thank you very much for the opportunity to come here.
Thanks, Dr. Thanks, Lam. we just do that? For the CEO?
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Honorable Members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure for me to present to you on Agrima South Africa annual report 2009. First, I'd like to congratulate the new chairperson on being appointed the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. Briefly, my presentation is as you can see it in front of you. I will start by going through the mandate. We operate under delegation of authority from the Minister of Public Works, and our mandate is to provide assurance by carrying out testing, evaluation, confirmation and certification of fitness for purpose of non-standard construction products and systems and materials. Basically, these are modern or improved or new innovations which are not covered by the Bureau of Standards. Later, I'll explain this in slightly more detail as to what I mean by products which are not covered by the Bureau of Standards. As mentioned by our chairperson, we get our administrative support from the CSIR. In terms of our functions, as I mentioned, we operate under delegation of authority from the Minister. On slide number three, I've just listed three key functions which we do. First is to support innovation and technology transfer, and thereby enhancing public safety in the built environment. This by allowing that products that we test can be used safely within the construction industry. In terms of development and maintenance of a technically administrative sound system for evaluation of new products that have national and international credibility. Before we test something, we have to develop a criteria or a minimum standard of performance by which we will be able to use as a basis for testing. And obviously, as a result of the third bullet there, as a result of our testing, it encourages the export of South African innovative products or products which have been produced in South Africa for export to other parts of the world. On slide number four, our origin, as mentioned by our chairman, this is our 40th year, and we're honored to be visited by a number of parliamentarians during our 40th anniversary, which was held on the 7th of last month in Pretoria. Basically, our question we are normally asked, why was it that Agrima was established 40 years ago? And I followed through going through the history and found out that it was as a result of several bad examples of failures of innovative construction systems and construction products. A team was put together which included government, provincial, municipality, regulatory authorities, people from the Bureau of Standards, the CSR, and the entire construction industry took part in an extensive joint consultation process. And at the end of that consultation, it led to the recommendation to establish Agrima as an agency, as a one-stop agency to test these products, to stop substandard products, innovative products from being used in South Africa. So this recommendation was to establish a national evaluation service, Agrima, on which building officials across the entire country can base their decisions on the suitability and acceptability of innovative building products. I'll just pause there for a moment and just look at 40 years ago, what happened. The scenario was a few products came in from outside the country, they built big projects, and it resulted in failures widespread. So the agency was set up such that building officials, before they're the ones who approve or disapprove a plan when you want to build within a municipality jurisdiction. So when something goes to building official, he can then refer it to Agrima because they have the authority and the mandate to approve or disapprove innovative construction systems within their jurisdiction. So Agrima is there to give them support or to give them an ability to be able to refer to our expert opinion on the acceptability of an innovative product within their jurisdiction. On slide number five, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen, I've just listed three key objectives, and not that this is all the objectives we have, but just the key objectives. Obviously, it's to align the agency with the national imperatives as stipulated in the government State of the Nation address, and we also support the National Department of Public Works in the current legislative process to formalize the process of AGRAMA being a public legal entity, and we also support the full implementation of national transformation initiatives. Those are the key objectives currently. And if you look at the last year, 2009, it was a good year for AGRAMA, and I've listed some of the highlights of performance. We had ongoing human resource capacity development resulting in improved technical outputs for the nation. We had a record number of products receiving AGRAMA certification in our financial year. We had improvements in laboratory equipment resulting in improved performance of testing. We had also improved recruitment of highly skilled technical staff. All this resulted in improved turnaround time in terms of assessments, and we also introduced in-house testing. And during that year as well, we hosted the successful 13th World Federation of Technical Assessments annual meeting, which was held last year in September. Over the page on slide number seven, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, we have examples of what are defined as innovative construction systems. And some of them use modern and improved methods of and new methods of construction. Also, they could also be new ways or new methods of applying traditional materials. For example, you could have a windowsill, which is people are used to them, but then you could have a new way of installing it, which makes it work better. A typical example, we had one sill. In the traditional ways, we had an internal sill and an external sill in the building system. We had somebody who introduced one composite system, which works both internally and externally. So that's a traditional method, but used in a new way. It could also be improvements in design to enhance functionality in construction. A typical example is the tilt-up construction, whereby the constructor reinforced concrete structure on the ground and lift it up with the doors and windows already installed. So that's a new way of constructing a traditional system. The next bullet point says that it could be a system design, e.g. designing for energy efficiency. Crisis is a global energy crisis, and obviously if something is designed to improve energy efficiency, it has innovative benefits. It could also be performance-based design. It could be fit for purpose. In other words, it could do something better. For example, soil stabilizing material that stabilizes the ground before you put the final road pavements. It could also be improved use of resources contributing towards global sustainability initiatives. A typical example could be the use of recycling plastics for various uses. We've seen them being used nowadays for roof tiling, where they take waste plastic, they put it in a kiln, they boil it, and then add other additives, and then they use it as a roof tile. And we've tested this, and some of them work. So these are just some examples. And AGRAMA, we must maintain impartiality to ensure the credibility of the technical assessment agency. All our certificates are equally credible. We do not support one in favor of another. All of them have passed the test, and therefore all of them can be used as products that meet the national building regulations. Honorable members, in slide number eight, we have a typical development cycle. And in this slide, I will try and explain the differences in the mandate between the CSR, AGRAMA South Africa, and the Bureau of Standards in a typical development cycle. Ladies and gentlemen, you would realize that you are all aware of the CSR, which is mainly a R&D, Research and Development Agency. They are the ones who do the thinking, the research, the development, the conceptualization, product development, and that kind of thinking that comes before a product is developed. Now, once that product is developed, it falls within the realm of Agrima South Africa as an independent assessment agency. Not all products have to go through this process. I'm just explaining a typical product development cycle. So we play in that gap, that middle area. Once a product has been developed and before it becomes used as a standardized product, we can give credibility and testing of that product to see whether it does can be used as a fit-for-purpose product or not. Once there are three or four or five different suppliers, then industry can get together, they develop standards. As you're aware, the National Standards Development Procedure is a consensus-based, industry-driven process. And once standards have been developed, the product may then be used as an ongoing standardized product. So I'll just repeat again, just in very brief. CSR, mainly research. Agrima, mainly certification. Bureau standards, it's standardized products, ongoing certification. So that explains the relationship or the product development cycle and the role that they do play within the introduction of products to the market. On slide number 9, I try and explain how the Standards Act, the Building Standards Act, Act 103 of 1977, which is the overarching act which protects the health and safety of individuals. It's the overarching act under which all products must comply. And you have the building regulations, the National Building Regulations, which actually explains how to apply the act. And under that, you have the compliance with the mandatory roles. The first two are mandatory. One must comply with the standards. And the voluntary levels is where the Agrima falls in as a performance-based standard, where we test a product in accordance with the Act, with the mandatory levels. So on slide number 10, I've tried to explain that the Bureau of Standards is a statutory body which is it was established in 1945 under Act 24 of 1945. And you're aware of the mandate, which is an institution that promotes and maintains standardization and quality in connection with commodities and services. And on the next slide, I do give a couple of its objectives. Obviously, as I mentioned previously, it publishes national standards through technical committees. And committees have industry representatives. We do play a part. We sit in a number of the SABS standards development committees and several other committees within the Bureau of Standards. And within SABS, they also have a testing facility where they test and do certain tests on standardized products. And they develop specifications and promote design excellence as well as providing training. Now, when I come on slide number 12, I turn back to Agrima. And internally, we do have a board in terms of governance. We report to a board which is appointed by the Minister of Public Works. The current board was appointed in September 2007, 2 years, slightly over 2 years ago, for a period of 3 years. And Mr. Pepe Silinga is currently the chairperson who chairs the board of the 11 members. The 11 members are in the annual report, which you did receive. The board provides a strategic leadership and oversight over the agency. And they do have an annual strategic planning session. The current board meets at least four times a year. And as was mentioned by the chairperson, our finances are audited, and we did receive a clean audit report as part and parcel of the CSIR. On slide number 13, I do continue on governance. And the board has three subcommittees to enable it to handle its affairs. The first one is the Audit and Risk, which is chaired by a board member by the name of Mrs. Nozi Shabalala. We do have a Human Resources and Remunerations Subcommittee chaired by Montwedi Siane, and the Technical Committee, which is chaired by Mike Marler. The subcommittees of the board hold regular meetings during the year, each one reporting back to the board at the board meetings. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of Parliament, in slide number 14, I do have the percentage breakdown of the human resources. I didn't put the numbers, but as the Chairman did say, we are only 13 members, and by simple arithmetic, you can do the calculations. We are highly transformed, as you can see. 82% are either black or female. And we do provide a supportive working environment to all, as well as a comprehensive structured mentorship program. In terms of, in slide number 15, I look back at where housing was a while back in South Africa and to where we are. In slide number 15, since 94 and 2002, the government put in a lot of millions of houses have been built since 1995. Most of them were the typical box houses which we've been used and which we've been used to, which has been the norm and the practice. However, due to the current delivery rate, which is about 200,000 odd units a year, and disregarding growth, it will take more than 30 years to eradicate the current housing backlog. We need to bring faster and quicker and more efficient means of reconstructing houses. And in slide number 16 and 17, I've just given you two examples of houses which have been constructed at the Eric Molobi Innovation Hub in Shashanguva, where it's a showcase showcasing innovative construction materials. Now, this innovation hub is constructed in Pretoria. There's a current one being constructed here in the Cape in Paarl, of which construction is beginning right now. And it will be a second innovation hub in the country. Our hope is that there'll be another showcase in maybe the east on the Eastern Cape side or within Durban area, so that people can see alternative ways of construction. Now, the first building system on slide number 16 and on slide number 17 is a home that is suitable for the needs of the majority of the people of South Africa. As you can see, the houses are quite neat and look very nice. The interesting thing is that majority of these innovative systems cost, some of them cost less, some of them have better performance in terms of thermal performance, and a lot of them can be constructed a lot quicker, and they also have labor creation potential. They provide jobs for the people in the community. Honorable Chair, on slide number 18, I have the impacts and achievements of AGRIMA. We have about 482 certificates which have been issued. And I've listed the number of certificated products which have gone on to become used as standardized products. I'll just mention one or two of them. The metal roof tiles, they came through the AGRIMA route and are now used as standardized products. Lightweight internal partition, also used extensively. Hard-drawn copper tubing, which is used for water supply. It also came through the AGRIMA routing. I'm sure you can remember long ago, galvanized iron was a standard that was used extensively. And basically, if you look at other achievements, AGRIMA gives an authoritative assessment of system performance. In other words, in industry, people rely on the AGRIMA certificate. They call it the Rolls-Royce certificate, because once you have it, then you know that your product is good. It's fit for purpose. And it leads to local economic stimulus, because once you produce it, you can provide jobs in the area where you're working. It also leads to improvements of existing products. It leads to new and better ways of doing things. It also provides for the promotion of export of South African products to other countries and provides reassurance on the fitness for purpose. Overleaf on slide number 19, I'll just be a bit more on the technical side. I'm just about to finish the technical aspects. I list the typical scope of evaluation, which looks at things like its structural strength. Is it strong enough? Can it be broken? Can it withstand pressure? What happens when there's a fire? We are all aware of the deadly consequences of runaway fires, so we look at how this product performs in fire, so that we ensure that it must be safe enough for the people to exit the building safely before the building gets engulfed in a big fire. And it also must provide resistance to water penetration and rising damp, so that the people living inside may be safe live in a healthy environment. Thermal and energy performance, I've spoken about before. Condensation is also an issue related to health and safety. Acoustic, if it allows too much noise going through, then obviously it's not suitable. So these are some of the aspects you look at. Obviously, quality is a key issue, durability, and obviously all products must comply with the National Building Regulations. On the next three slides, I'll just show shown a couple of tests which we do carry out just so that you can have a visual impression of some of the tests that we do carry out. The first is the deterioration test, a soft body impact test where you bash a wall with a 30 kilogram sandbag, the panel compression where you actually compress a panel by pulling it together, and then you actually also do carry out fire tests where you burn the products to see how they perform in fire. Now, on slide number 23, I'll turn to how we as AGRIMA are responding to the state of the nation. The government on the 3rd of June, when the Honorable President, Mr. Jacob Zuma, gave the State of the Nation address, he listed 10 key priorities in the MTSF, Medium-Term Strategic Framework. Now, how does AGRIMA respond and how do we respond to these 10 key objectives? And I've just listed how we respond very, very briefly to each of the points. The first one was speeding up economic growth and transforming the economy and to create decent work and sustainable livelihoods. Obviously, by verifying the fitness for purpose of products, we facilitate acceptance and minimize the risk and also financial risk and safety and health of the products which we certificate and can be used by the people of South Africa. The second probably key point in the State of the Nation address on the 3rd of June was a massive program to build economic and social infrastructure. Now, our program, I've mentioned previously that our products, a lot of them can lead to faster construction, quicker speed of construction. And AGRIMA evaluation, therefore, are a means of enabling the introduction of innovative solutions to some of the challenges that we face. We also, the third point was develop and implement a comprehensive rural development strategy. Well, a lot of our products can be used in rural areas and therefore assist in the development of a comprehensive rural development strategy. In strengthening the skills and human resource base, we assist the municipalities in making informed decisions on the use of non-standard products and systems. The fifth point was improve the health profile of all South Africans. All our products concentrate mainly on safety and health issues. And the sixth point was intensify the fight against crime and corruption by certifying non-standardized innovative products, for example, security doors and fencing. These may be used in the fight against crime. On slide number 25, point number 7, was build a cohesive, caring and sustainable community. Obviously, proper housing and improved infrastructure will go a long way to providing a caring and sustainable community. And then working with Africa and the rest of the world to pursue African advancement and enhance international cooperation. I must state that a lot of our certificates are currently used in many African countries as the basis to facilitate the acceptance of innovative building products, not only within Africa but the rest of the world. A number of the products are exported to Europe, Australia and the United States, etc., etc. And point number 9 is to ensure sustainable resource management and use. We are currently investigating ways of assessing sustainability and green issues. We are playing a key role in the Sustainability Council. And the last point was to build a development state and improve public services and strengthen democratic institutions. We participate in this priority by ensuring that our products are actually fit for purpose. Honorable Chair, on slide number 26 and 27, I've listed the different certificates that were awarded during the year. I'll not read through them. I'm sure you've all read them in the annual report. But in the next three slides, the next four slides after slides 28 to 31, I've listed the current building systems for your information. These are available on our website, and one can look at them at any time. I'll skip slide number 32, which is the financial statements which the finance manager will go through, and I'll just conclude by saying that AGRIMA will continue to contribute to South Africa's national presidential imperatives and sustainable human settlements through diverse innovative products. And AGRIMA is committed to service delivery and accountability in accordance with its current mandate. And together, we will deliver improved quality construction materials and building systems. On slide number 34, I've just given a link to our website, and I thank you very much.
Thanks, Brajo. That's fine. The last conclusion, together we will deliver improved quality, etc., etc. It sounded so ANC, together we can do more. You know? You're on the right track, eh? Okay. Let's do the financial part and then open up for discussion. Financial officer?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. The financial statements are presented in slide number 32, and that's the financial statements for period ending 31st March 2009. That has been alluded earlier by both the Chairman and the CEO of Agrima. Agrima operates under the CSIR governance framework in terms of the corporate governance principles and in terms of the framework that it operates under. And the financial period ending 31st March 2009, Agrima received an unqualified audit report from the audit being audited by the Auditor General, and we received an unqualified audit report. In terms of, if I can just maybe briefly touch on the highlights of the financial performance of Agrima, the grant for the year in 2009 financial year was 7 million, and then of that there is also 745,000, which is in fees that are derived from certification work that Agrima does. And then if you look at, for instance, the expenses, manpower cost, that is the salaries and the related expenses that come with the salaries. And if you go down, there is running cost of about 1.5 million. That is the cost like traveling, et cetera, all costs that are necessary to deliver on the mandate of Agrima. And we also have equipment that Agrima has in its possession, or in the financial statements that equipment is being depreciated. And Agrima operates under a shared services model. That's why you have those two lines at the bottom, which is shared services cost of 543, and then also there's group executive levy of 534. And the net margin as at the end of the financial year was 370,000, or the net surplus from the operations of Agrima was 370,000, and that was also being audited, and it was well received by the Auditor General, and the financial statements were not qualified at the end of the financial year. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Members, I'm opening this for your engagement and discussions. Obviously, we're dealing with an entity with a very small budget of 8 million here. And you can see that you can't really catch them, you see. They are like fish in the big pool of CSIR. So, if we do our Pamola, CSIR is there all the time. So, and with a clean audit report, I don't think we can do a lot about it. We just have to commend them for the audit report. But I don't know whether to give them the credit or to give it to the CSIR. I know that if, for instance, the CSIR would have gotten a qualified report, they would not want to take the blame, you see. They would say, you know, it's because of the CSIR systems that you are in this mess, and so on and so on. So you're in a very invidious position there. If things go right, I mean, you can claim the victory. If they go wrong, you can say, we're not part of it. It's also a good strategy, I suppose. But let's see. I'm more interested into going forward. Let me see some hands. Let me start with Pradeni, Boma Gama, Boma Sango, in that order. Pradeni?
Yeah. I was interested when the example that you said for the type of standard, definitions of standard that you said, that one where the I think, foundation, then doors and windows. That didn't make a lot of sense to me because, you know, as a consumer, whether windows are put after or before or they are standing, that is immaterial for as long as ultimately I have a house with windows. Now, the one that makes me more interested is this one on housing, that there can be houses that are built faster, labor intensive, and cost effective. Now, the question is, you know, we can have all these innovative ways. If you don't see the impact nationally, in a sense, then it defeats the purpose because we're still sitting with a backlog and you're saying it is going to take about 30 years. The question is, are you able to say this is the new innovation of building houses faster that will create jobs which are even cheaper? And government, can you cascade this program and government buys it? Because it looks like, if I may ask, a lot of provinces are still using the old method of building in their tender houses the old way. Now, if innovation is there, but the nation is not taking advantage of it because they don't know about it, then we're really not achieving. The second point I would want to make, which is linked to this one, is about informal settlement. If for the next 8 years South Africa is going to be having informal settlement as they are, rural areas in mud houses, and we're talking 21st century, South Africa is still looking very ugly. We'd like to see an innovation where even for informal settlement, temporary houses where you can just buy, assemble, but they look nice and neat, you know. And in the rural areas, instead of building mud houses, this cheaper material, people can just assemble and, you know, let South Africa just look beautiful for the next 8 years to show that we do have skills, we do have the innovation that is needed. But South Africa is still looking ugly as if we don't have thinkers. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Brother Denny. Dr. Maga.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome, Comrade Manan. All right.
The on slide 2 of the presentation, it is alluded there that there's some administrative support provided by the CSIR. Now, what I want to know is to what extent does the CSIR also provide technical support? That's the one. The second one is on slide 19. Say what is conspicuously absent in all the issues listed there. Is the environmental issues, whilst it is raised in another slide somewhere towards the end of where they are saying that they are looking at, they are investigating, that slide 25, at investigating ways of assessing sustainability and green issues. Now, South Africa has committed itself to looking at ways of supporting the movement towards or in terms of the green movement, shall I say. Now, if this does not permeate every aspect of what we do, whilst these materials may be accurate in terms of building, they may be durable, but if they are not environmentally friendly, they defeat other purposes. That's the one. The other one is the issue of the 10 priorities on slides 23 to 25. Now, Chair, see, my problem is, if you look at, for instance, Point one, there's a speed up economic growth and transform the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihoods. AGRIMAS says verifies fitness or purpose of products, you know, facilitate acceptance and so on. How does that speed up? Because my understanding of those policy statements made pronounced by the president are precisely that we must do something more, different from what we've been doing all along. So if we will simply continue verifying these products for fitness of purpose, we've been doing that for the past 40 years. So I'm saying there is a disjuncture, Chair, between what is presented as the priorities in the MTSF and what we seek to achieve through the pronouncements made by the president. And that goes through virtually all the other issues. I mean, I can take anyone, say point two, massive program to build economic and social infrastructure. Now, AGRIMAS massive program is the evaluations as a means of enabling introduction of innovative solutions. Now, what is required, Chair, is something more to bring about that mass program to build social infrastructure. So what is it that my request at this point, I don't want to, it's not necessarily a question, Chair, but is I think for AGRIMA really to see how best they can align themselves in terms of these policy statements made by the President. Now, the last issue is the Auditor General could not obtain the contract between CSIR and the department. Now, Chair, I don't know, am I posing the question to the wrong people, that we actually get back to what you said earlier, that AGRIMA will probably say no, but then you see you must speak to the CSIR. They'll probably be able to assist. But then, obviously, it raises serious issues, compliance issues. If there is no contract, who knows whether indeed they comply in terms of the terms of that contract between the department and so. Yes, on the other hand, I think congratulations really is in order. But lastly, Chair, why is there such a huge disjuncture between their budget for manpower specifically, and the other operational expenses? It's something in the order of, I think, what, 4.5 million of the 8 million rand. So it's more than 50% of the budget that actually goes to 13 people. Those are some of the issues. So thanks.
We understand. I'll just start with Masako. And then from there we'll take responses, and if any other members want to ask questions, we'll go there. Masako.
Yeah, so thank you, Chair. I think some of us have been engaged with AGRI for quite some long time last time, and I think we'll be just repeating ourselves. But just take note, me and Joe, we've been working for the biggest industry in South Africa. So, you know, the biggest industry in South Africa is only South Africa, no other one.
Now, which Joe are you? There are so many Joes.
The chairperson. I mean the CEO.
Okay.
Chairperson, the only thing I wanted, AGRIMAS, really, because we've been asking for this, is just maybe in future they must come, this manpower, they must come with a breakdown to say for their salary, what is it for the AGRIMO salary, so that we can know what much is going to AGRIMO for salaries, and you know what is left, where does it, the other one. I don't know whether should they call it the, you know, this one that goes to CSR consultant or what, so that we really understand what is it, because it's manpower, and in other words, there is actually no operational expenses, because because according to them, all the money goes to salaries, and I don't think that gives sense at all. So in future, they must just give us that. The second one, Chairperson, maybe they must also define the executive levies, because I'm still not sure what does it mean. I'm still asking myself, and I really don't understand what does it give. If they can just tell us really what are those executive levies. The other one, Joe, can you just explain 30 years from now is that we are not going to be able to reach what we want to build for houses. Are you talking from now or since 1994? Because I think, I don't know whether did you consult with the housing department to make sure they agree with you. The other difference I see, Chairperson, is the grant from the Department of Public Works. According to the Auditor General, the money that was deposited into their CSIR account is 8,000,070. And on there, on the ACMOS, is 7,000,000. So it's a difference of almost 1,000,000. I'm not sure whether the money goes first to the CSIR and thereafter CSIR decides how much do they give to ACMOS, because that's a difference I'm taking note. The other one is the same with what Gama is asking, because I also couldn't understand. According to the Auditor General, there is totally no, they couldn't find an agreement between the department and the CSIR. And on what basis are they operating if there is no agreement between the two? It's a question mark. The last one, Chairperson, I just want us to make sure we don't lose focus of the comments of the Auditor General. The Auditor General says because the above procedure do not constitute either an audit or a review made in accordance with the internal audit statutes, we do not express any assurance in connection with the income received and the expenses income incurred by the CSR for the period. So that statement must just stay in our mind so that we take note of. Even in future, we'll be still asking the same. Thank you, Chair.
Very much. I think in clarifying the 30 years, you must just help us there. My understanding was that if we move at the pace of building since 94, then it's going to take us 30 years. Or were you saying that with the current backlog, we are going to finish it in 30 years? I just wanted also to understand that point. You know, I can see that you and Magama and the CEO, you come from big companies, you see, where we are still using the terminology of manpower. Let's say HR for now. Eh? That's money crack story. I'm just saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm quoting the three of you. Human resources and so on. Or person power. It's better than manpower. The general sensitivities of the time. Can we get some responses?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On the first question from Danny, the definition of standards.
It's Honorable Kikana, ne?
Honorable Kikana.
Yeah. Okay. Not Danny, so. Yeah, at least if you say so.
The tilt-up construction where they construct a building that put the doors and windows is a technology where they use concrete, and it's one of the advantages is it creates jobs on the site where they're working, because they actually come and set up a production site where they're building, and they actually put the doors and windows while the structure is still on the ground, and then they lift it up in one operation. Why there's no impact nationally? I think of late there's been a bigger uptake. Department of Housing has taken up a number of projects. There's a big one, I think, close to 2,000 units which are built in Kalfontein, which is north of Johannesburg, south of Pretoria. And that has been completed last year, and there's a new one that is being done just south of Johannesburg. We also have another system, Emison, which has also built about five big projects in the last year or so. So of late there's been an uptake, there's been more, but why in the last
40-odd years, there's been not much interest is difficult to say. But we're hoping that these innovative systems actually do have more impact going forward. On the second question, informal settlements, I think this is an excellent question. We really must find a solution for the informal settlements. We are seeing new products which can be suitable for informal settlements. You may call them temporary housing, but some of them last even longer than normal housing. And there are solutions which can be used, and the question is how do we push them there and how do we get them? I think the international organization Habitat has a number of solutions which are similar to a number of our products, which can be used for informal housing solutions, whereby they come up with cheaper materials and cheaper solutions. One of the systems they're using, which is being introduced, is having extensive labor input, whereby instead of the people contributing money, they actually can contribute in terms of their manpower, sweat equity, as it's called. So we are seeing there are a number of solutions. Why they've not got uptake, it's difficult to say. So in short, all I can say is that, yes, a number of the products can be built faster. They have labor-intensive potential, and they can be introduced. I don't know if the chairperson wants to add something on the first question.
Okay. Thanks very much, honourable members, for those questions. I think just on the question of the impact, I think one of the challenges, honourable members, is that if you look at the housing program, the people who specify, you have some designers who are the ones who are going to be writing up the specification. Often you find that that's why there's lack of innovation and boldness and familiarity with what is coming out afresh in the market. Because often in civil engineering companies, if I may just speak to that, you have a design office, which almost like sets up the production line. The tender documents would be the same tender documents that people would have used for the past 10 years. The idea is that as long as you get to the market relatively quickly, you have less resources in the company, and that was not profitable for that small consulting company. The consequence being that you're getting the very same old specifications, and in some instances, a systemic repetition of old problems because of this old, almost like ossified production lines that have been developed. So I would agree with the honorable member that those innovations without almost like massification have no purpose whatsoever. One of the ways we think it could help in an instance where a client department has bought into a particular strategic intent, also because innovation over and above the capability that is the ease of construction, there should be some benefit from a cost point of view because of the speed of the short construct. If the client department is put into it, it's much easier than if the client departments who are in fact encouraging because they are the ones who are then promoting the use of these technologies. Even if the client department tries to do more for us, but for us, there isn't that barrier in the department level, even because the client family has these particular technologies. You get those isolated, what I call islands of excellence in the midst of difficulties, so to speak. So I agree with the member. The other problem, of course, is that the academic institutions themselves, it's an embarrassment that they want us one or they always put one. But often you find that even in the academic institutions, the needs that have not been used are not the general on a wheelchair. Because they allowed the professor to know them for a question of 5-30 years. And the rest of the person is not into research and development, and they keep doing research that the data that is actually coming in the market. You'll find that the products of those academic institutions are very parochial, very old-fashioned, if you like. And in South Africa, in particular, in science and technology, but in those paradigms, that alternative is set upon it. And that's what discouraged. that something that is a bit more that going to be better for our teams. I think in the point you are speaking in particular from the local environment, because that's where I have some familiarity.
Let's go to the second question, but not lose sight of the importance of us going forward. You see, we should not. I'm not suggesting that I'm limiting your responses, but here we are. If I take my own example, my grandma's mud house lasted longer than some of the RDPs that we had in the recent years. You see, maybe that takes into account the point that you're raising about new must be better, not just new and so on, but weaker. So it's important just to make that distinction. But yes, let's go for innovation, but innovation that propels the country forward, not fly-by-night companies that come to make a quick buck. Because what we are here for and about, it's about the centrality of the end user. A contractor doesn't have a relationship with the house. He builds the house and they go. The end user is going to stay there for 20, 30, whatever years. So they've got that burden or that pride that stays with them. That's the choice we've got to make. So I think that is the gist of where we're trying to drive and go to. But I thank you for your response.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. On the second question from the Honorable Member, Honorable Magama, on slide 2, the question was, to what extent does the AGMA get support in terms of technical support from the CSR, and how much is the admin support from the CSR? We rely quite a lot on the CSR in terms of technical support because they have a lot of experts in the built environment, specifically the roads area. The CSR is extremely strong, and of late the building side, we have a couple of very good structural and building experts. So we rely extensively on the CSR for technical support in terms of specialists in support of the CSR. That's on slide number 2. The second question on slide number 19, in terms of percentage, I would say that quite extensively. They have a lot of experts, so it's quite extensive support. Okay. Slide number 19, environmental assessments. I just want to refer you back to slide number 9, which explains the process of assessment of compliance with the rules. The overarching act is the National Building Regulations Act 103 of 1977, and currently the country is still developing national standards for environmental assessments. So we, as a subset of that, we have to wait for the national standards, see what the playing field, what the bar is, and then after that, we can create environmental assessment criteria for non-conventional products. We cannot precede the national standards. So we are taking part in the two South African national standards, SANS 204 and SANS 258, which are the two environmental assessment laws which are currently being developed by the National South African Bureau of Standards. So we are still in that phase. Hopefully, the two standards will be completed this year, hopefully. And therefore, from next year, we should be in a position to develop our criteria and therefore include environmental assessments within our tests or within our assessment criteria. On the 10 priorities, I do agree that, Honorable Magama, that AGRIMA cannot do everything. But we do what we can within our mandate to align ourselves with the national priorities. We cannot be, do all that there is in terms of national priorities, but to try and align ourselves as much as possible with what the national government is doing within our mandate. I regret that there's no contract that could be found between the CSR and the National Department of Public Works on Agrima South Africa. We have looked for that copy in the old historical copies and asked the people who were there at the time, and unfortunately we cannot get a contract at this moment in time. I apologize for that.
Now, this is a set of questions from Baba Masango. But just before we move on from the issues to Baba Magano, the admin or technical support that you get from CSIR, do you pay for that, for those services? And where do you allocate that payment? Maybe you can answer it as part of the second or the third question. I'm just trying to establish if the remuneration that goes to personnel is just the personnel on your side, or do you also pay for some services or whatever that are happening within the CSIR?
Just a follow up on that one. With regard to some of the products that emanate from the CSIR itself, when they come to them for assessment and certification, how independent then are those assessments when the CSIR is, you know, technically, if in fact they are involved to the extent that the CEO says they are?
Right. Please. Anyone?
Honorable Chair, honorable members. On the question of if there is any fees or any payment that ACRIMA makes towards the CSIR, if you look at that, also links to the question that one of the honorable members asked with regards to the executive levy, because one of the members was asking what exactly the executive levy of 534 entail. That's the fees that the CSIR charges ACRIMA SA for having ACRIMA operating within the ambit of the CSIR. That would include, for instance, the time that the CEO of the CSIR and the CFO, etc., etc., and all the support functions that are being, and also includes things like your IT, etc., those support systems that are being provided to ACRIMA SA by the CSIR. So there is a levy that the CSIR levies to ACRIMA SA for those services. And also, there was also a question with regard to the there to be a discrepancy between the amount that is shown in the income or in the financial statement of 7 million being the grant and what the auditors have referred to the 8 million. The difference between the two is the VAT amount, because the amount that the grant that the CSIR or ACRIMA receives from the Department of Public Works, which is 8.07 million, that amount has VAT to it. So the CSIR or ACRIMA has to pay VAT to the amount. The VAT amount is now at 91,000 that ACRIMA has to pay to SARS for the ACRIMA, for the grant that ACRIMA SA receives from Department of Public Works. And as a result, the net amount, or the amount that is showing in the financial statements, is the amount that remains with ACRIMA after VAT has been paid to SARS.
HR matters. Do you have an answer about the breakdown, or can you give us later? Madam?
Honourable Chair, honourable members, the amount for human resources costs, for staffing costs, for ACRIMA South Africa is reflected in the manpower costs. Any costs of salaries of staff who are support staff to ACRIMA is reflected in shared services costs.
Are you able to give us a, not now, can you send us a page that says these are the salaries that we pay, annual salaries and so on?
I am able to do that, but you're also able to put it off slide 32 in the presentation. Unless you want the...
Let's give you one. What are you looking for? You say you've got 13 staff members.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what the honourable member is saying, we want to check also in terms of the salaries that you pay. You know, are they well beyond the... Or are they within the market related, or where are they? Are you able to give us a breakdown, and so on and so on? You don't have to rush to give the answer now.
I am able to. I can give you. I don't know the exact salaries for the 13 staff members, but just in relation to the market where they're sitting at the moment. The construction industry is a lot of uptake of staff in the area, and in general, depending on where you sit in the construction industry in the built environment. The salaries normally move between 16% and 25% year on year, so it's massive movements that we're looking at. In terms of Agrimark South Africa, when you look at the market lines for the actual staff, on a compo ratio, if 100% is what...
Now you're confusing all of us. What's a load of the... Do you want the exact details or just... Can I just pose the question was very direct. Can I just...
Okay.
Browse your survey, I'll come back to you.
Chairperson, if you look at the you don't like it, the manpower, but it's written manpower, I must just use it as a... If you look at it, it's almost 65% of the total they got.
Yeah.
And they got 13 employees. Now we want to know, these 13 employees, how much did they receive? And it's also important to know, you know, as Joe is the CEO, how much is your earning? It's also important to us to see. We have seen how much the board members are earning, which is all right. And then the remaining one, I just want to know, what is the remaining one? Where is it going? Because I'm not sure what is the remaining one going to.
Are you wanting an answer now, or do you want...
No. I've said in future.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine.
Okay, can I just tell you, I'm a part of the right of information,
all right. You still have the floor, madam. I haven't taken away the floor.
Thank you very much. We will provide the information via the Office of the Chair. Is that possible? And then in relation to where our staff are sitting, they're probably sitting at about 80% of where they should. 80% of in relation to the market.
Okay. Can we come back to that question of the 30 years backlog and or forecast?
Okay. If I may, thank you very much, Chair. Could I just take the question that I raised around the team priorities as a point of entry? Because I think it begins to speak about the strategic intent of the developed end state. The view of the board chair is that at the moment Agrimark is the environment or the space within which Agrimark is operating is very active, very profile, for all space. In the sense that it's very active sector of Ireland, or human settlement, if I may, part of the problem over and above the quality of the human capital bearing those assets, but part of the hypothermic component is, in fact, the quality of the material. Now, South Africa at the moment, other than customs, actually does not have a requirement that a product that is coming from the outside, but it's from outside of the borders. But for that matter, even if it's produced locally, that it must actually meet particular minimum standards before it's actually sold out in the market. The problem is being that depending on the market forces, the bottom line depends. In the market, you can produce corrugated iron, which is very thin, but you can actually burn it with your hand, and at the fire already, the chips are relatively very thick. But there are regulations from government side, insofar as burning the water is concerned. You are then able to get those massive volume problems with picking up poor material. The conversation about the material that gets you the request of power clarity. Now, I think that the public cares about the technology solution that comes out of, in particular, the public sector, from the moral material which has not gone through any certification process. If you have something like that, you will stop this problem by doing the strikes. And I think that the legislation that has been prepared at the moment would help in solving a lot of public resources which go to this particular material. And the children can go from cement to windows to tires to any of these particular products. You get a lot of these particular substance materials. Now, the other problem that is actually concerning about the danger to society, both from health, environmental, safety, quality, durability, sustainability, but the other unintended consequence that it is that it actually kills domestic economy. Because what you get foreign companies which are sensitized to their domestic environment for purposes of exporting in particular to third world countries. They are not going to suffer the consequence of substandard materials. And a cooperation that leads between entities like Agronia, SAPS, as well as SAS, customs, to ensure that the material that actually comes in meet a particular standard, or else the difference in size would not have the technical way of doing to determine whether it actually does or doesn't. So, in a sense, you need some particular cooperation. I'm suggesting, Chai, that it's fundamental to change the scale. Because if you have legislation and if you have the capacity to enforce it, otherwise it serves no purpose. But it does mean that there are thousands of developed, like there are hiring programs that get constructed and actually placed on a random basis for compliance to a particular custom and standard. And that's because the penalties must be material enough for the doctor to serve the limit and the logic to comply. I'm suggesting, Chair, that this legislation will take us from where we are, from a directive start, which basically deals with a product from an entrepreneur who is very involved to bring that particular product. At the moment, everybody can put a label on a product which is misleading to tell them from the proposition, like for instance, saying that this tank will last for 15 years. You can do that. And no one is going to say that, they know that's not true. Because there's no legislation that actually prohibits it to the best of our knowledge. I'm suggesting, if I then go back to these priorities of improving the quality of life, scaling, and the point that the honorable member is raising is important, that is true. I think it's possible on the world trajectory. Well, the going the same world thing, the same old world, hoping for a different result. And it's unlikely to happen. And that's why I think that the characteristics of this legislation must be fundamentally transformative. And no matter how viable to respond to the challenges that government is actually dealing with. Thank you.
There was a question about what happens if there is a CSIR product coming to you for certification. Don't you have this dilemma as a stepchild to say, hey, are you able to say hi, Baba, and so on? That was the gist of the question. If you can just respond briefly to that one.
A committee which is called the technical committee, and that committee is a committee of the board. It is a committee which sets forth technical experts, members of which are external experts, independent experts that are based in academic institutions or research institutions or private practitioners themselves, or experts in a particular area. So, that is expected. Who are they expected to evaluate that particular product against a particular standard criteria that has been are notified if you have an independent assessed and appropriate for that particular product. But when it comes to this board, even though an agreement is a proper agency agreement with the CSR, but actually the board operates independent of CSR. So in that, for my own setting, we apply our minds to the recommendation that interact with those particular exhibits. I think that in an instance where something like that has happened, it would be an infraction, if you like, it would be an irregularity.
Here with a situation where South Africa is very fragmented when it comes to the testing, the verification, and or generally in the built environment materials that are either coming from locally or coming from outside. So we've got this gap where we've got institutions doing their own things. And you actually having to do a huge job with a very lean budget, having no legal standing except for material ministerial determination. There is no law that governs AGRIMA except for, you know, what the minister gives you as a mandate. That's one. Now having said that, they obviously will end up also blaming you for things that you're not responsible for, which is we're just looking for culprits sometimes. And it's our duty also as the legislators to find some sort of solution so that the centrality of the end user, for instance, is respected. I'm making this point just to illustrate an example. Door handles. We are used to door handles that, you know, are very firm. Now lately we go to these things, you get door handles that are as thin as this. You see, I've broken two already. Just trying to open the door, and you know, I used to be a mine worker before, so I've got a very firm grip. Two of them went. So I'm just saying that. What do we say? I mean, it might be cheaper to buy such material, but it doesn't help. It doesn't last. You see, and there are dangers of health and safety as well in such situations. So that's the one thing, and we recently passed an innovation legislation in this parliament that tries to say let's encourage it, innovation and things like that. Things that you're also trying to do and certify. You see, but the responsibilities are very much scattered. And conflating the roles is one of the problems that we're sitting with. The CSIR has been there for a very long time, and they are credited with doing very good job in terms of research in particular, but also testing of some of the technologies that are coming and so on. You see, there are issues that we can improve on, particularly when it goes beyond just where it goes the patent inside and so on. When we patent issues, that's where the CSIR has also been playing a role. The international standing, and we must commend you as well in terms of what you've been playing in the international arena, just to take the name of the South Africa where it is in terms of that. But in South African Bureau of Standards as well. CSIR yourselves, SABS, and you can name others. We just need to find a way of saying, how do we bring all this together to have some sort of minimum standards. You see? Not that, for instance, the CSIR, if I may just give a crude example, will do the, and SABS, the first economy stuff, you know, as illustrated in the, you know, we know we've got one economy, but in this instance, just to illustrate the point. And the second economy stuff maybe is dumped on your lap, you see, to just give certification. We might give it an interpretation of, yeah, it's quality, creates jobs and so on. We can do all those type of things. But if particularly some of the material and things are used for the disadvantaged and it's not helping, then it's a problem. If, for instance, we say you give certification for those handles and they go into the townships, they're going to break, although most of them, doesn't help. Just making an example, not that I'm appropriating the handles to you as agreement in this instance. So we need to streamline standards here so that health, safety, environmental issues are key and taken into account. When it comes to legislation, when I read this documentation of yours as well, you see that the future is to have some sort of law that governs you properly, that gives you autonomy or whatever, maybe even a bigger budget than what you have. You know, you can't with 13 staff members, I'm just saying 13 as the maximum, you know, deal with the enormity of the problem that we have in the built environment. No, that will be expecting too much of us, from us here, of you. You see? But having said that, we need to look into the strategic direction of this future that you're looking for. Is it autonomy or integration into a broader system? That's a question that you'll have to answer in terms of the proposal that you're giving to the minister in terms of legislation. But obviously, I also want to engage the minister at the strategic level here as the responsible authority for AGRIMA to say, where that to from here? I think that's an important question that we must also engage as with honorable members here. You see? Now, this whole question of, you know, in the trading industry, China is doing a lot of stuff by dumping and so on and so on. You're suggesting that you also have that in the built environment where the doors, the windows, the cement, you know, that kind of uncommon material coming, you know, and so on and so on. So that's even, you know, trading is one thing, but things that have got to last you for 50 years, hey, it's a problem. We need just to close that gap and ensure that we're giving people value for money and what they deserve as issues of dignity. I'm just raising this point so that you understand when we sit, some of us sit here to and look at you, what we're thinking. And I'm not expecting you to answer any of the questions, but just to go on. But then with that, is there anybody else who wants to say something because we have a laughter? And then it's gone. But don't come back, ne? Because you have a laughter. You want to come in?
Yeah.
You also want to come in? You also want to come in?
A reminder.
Okay. We'll end with a reminder. Rabotan. Right.
Mr. Chairman, just to add on what you have been saying, I think we all thought that we also need to invite SLBS here, because I think some of the things that we speak about, because we also have the issue of the sheet metals that just burned and we are so very thin. And how does SLBS approve such a sheet metal? I think that is also related to the diamond that you have just referred to. And I just wanted also to recall this committee that maybe we should also invite SLBS and, you know, direct some of these questions to them to explain to us how do they, you know, approach such materials, because they are actually not user friendly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Maybe even go beyond that to get the CSIR also here and others, because we don't want them to come and blame others. Let's bring them all here to come and say, you know, Bamguni.
Thank you, Chair. Listening to a presentation from the AGRIMA, let me call it ASA. You know, when you look at the ASA, you say Athletic South Africa. Can come into the play. Chairperson, you know, I'm trying to understand that the structure, this entity, is it unable to talk to the institution of higher learning, that is the universities and facts, so that to ensure that what they have approved or certificated, it becomes part of the curriculum at that level. So as to enable that when you at the level of tendering processes. Now, these, some of these materials approved, you know, form part of the specification required by, you know, by the SANS or whatever, at the level where this thing must be applied, must be done. Now, well, also the question of, for me, I think you'll remember that I'm a layman. Now, speaking from a layman's position, what they are certificating, what they are approving, how do you relate it to a layman on the ground? How do you translate what they've done to somebody that must use the material that they've approved? I don't know, because, you know, looking at the presentation, there's no way where it links direct with the ground. You know, for me, if I may relate this to you, for me, it's the first time that I see this company. Now, I'm born in South Africa, I grew up in South Africa. I'm more than 40 years old, but this company is more than 40 years, near 40 years, huh?
Yes.
It's 40 years old. I don't know, it's the first time I saw it. I saw it last time I was here. It's the first time I see it. Now, you say it has been doing this work all along, but where? At this level, on parliament level, how do you then connect it with me on the street, in the street, where I must now use the material that today it is approved? Now, you forgive me, Chair, I'm not addressing my political statement, but it's relevant. You say there is a house that must be built somewhere in Mupuduli. Yeah? And now there is a company that intends bringing a material that is alleged to be approved or certificated by this entity with a stamp on. The chairperson tried to cover it very well, but I'm just worried, will you be able as an individual at that level argue that no, this is not true? You're not going to be able to do that. You, the handle that the chairperson refers to, they've got SABS standard stamps. You buy them at your nearby building material shop. You can't stand and argue. I mean, what lake, which platform would you use that? In conclusion, Chair, we in the previous presentation, before the Chair became the Chair, I don't know, was it that the Manana took tea when they were here? We said we wanted to visit some of the sites of where these things are done, where they are provided are done, with a view that we also need to, you know, check with our own eyes. Although we don't command those expertise, but from the look of our naked eyes, maybe we might say, you know, this is right, this is not right. I don't know how far did we go with that, because the CSR is aware that it captured in the minutes that we must pay a visit to those sites. Thanks.
No, that's fine. They will respond, Babam Kuni. The two issues that I'll come back to are the issues that concern us in terms of our own program. But I'll deal with that later. Thank you, sir.
As a chairperson, I'm covered by Mr. Mgwen, because I just wanted to, something that they satisfy, how do I identify it is satisfied by them?
Okay. Reminder about Makam.
In one of his previous meetings where we dealt with this issue, and I must say, Chair, the chairperson of the board has adequately captured the debates or the fundamental issue that insofar as it relates to this issue of the substandard materials. Now, the CEO made the commitment in that meeting that he would engage with his counterparts in the South African Bureau of Standards, or what is it called now, SANS, regarding this particular issue. Because the other question that was raised was the extent to which these substandard materials find their way into the shops, you know, where we buy these materials on an everyday basis. It was a matter that also the CEO gave the commitment that he would engage with his counterparts in subs. So perhaps he must still come back with and report on that.
A big decision that we've got to make, but I'm sure we can take it forward, is to marry what the reminder with your request. The request that we must have a direct engagement with the SABS, and also that the commitment given by the CEO to say, you know, they will engage with their counterparts there. We'll find a way of marrying it so that as part of our oversight work, we can try and deal with this. If you can just capture it in a way that doesn't lose the meaning. But the point that I wanted to come back to, Bawan Kuni, was the issue that you were raising, also about side versus. We'll have to take, there are a lot of things that we've got to do. We've got to factor that into our oversight versus as we go out. You know, that's a matter that we'll have to do. And we'll liaise with them as well, in terms of Agrima South Africa, about, you know, what we would want to see. We'll prepare ourselves for that. The important issue that you're raising about the role of the institutions of higher learning in terms of their processes. I think we've raised a similar matter in the previous meetings where we said it's important for us as well to engage with the professional councils so that there is synergy between those councils and what the built environment generally is doing. So the engineering council was here, we left to meet with the construction and others and so on. So those are matters that we've already taken some views and decisions, I think, to say we must engage with them at a separate level. We'll have to find a way of just doing this. But importantly, I think we must get a response from our guests about this consumer education matter that you're raising. You know, if I've got to build a house, I'll just go and buy a whole brick. You see, not knowing whether it's standard that is required for my double story or whatever. You know, it's a whole brick, maybe it's cheap. We go for cost effectivity. But how do we know that some of those, because, you know, are certified, for instance, by Agrima? You know, because some are not even seen by Agrima, they are just happening under their noses. So those are the dilemmas that we're saying we need to close the gap here and find a way of streamlining the activities of such a certification. And that this will be your last bite anyway. So in what you say, you'll also give closing remarks or anybody and so on. After that, I ask Samuel Auli.
Thank you so much. So just to start with the question from Honorable Mguni, I want to try and challenge just reflected on this. I think an interaction between Agrima and the number one, the institutions of learning, in particular training institutions, as well as the academic institutions, would be very useful. It's not something that we've done, let's be honest, and it's something that we actually have started noticed that at this program led by the chief executive is to interact with the academic institutions, the expert members who constitute our panels must begin to reflect on strategic intent and understand what I'm trying to do too. And that has started. I have attended meetings where it's like 40% are actually black professionals, and various levels of professional development, some PhD, some at master's level, some researchers, some lecturers. Even more that will reflect that composition. So when we do that, we get them from those academic institutions. It can also help when we also interact with the institution formally. Because we always have that champion from within. Because in some instances, when they come and they participate in a test and they develop a product, in the way that they will take that, or they may take it and make it part of their subject. And when they get into doing their track, then they also incorporate it. So they begin to use it to promote the development of their own curricula as well. And inside the department, they find that there's a supporter who actually has got an opportunity to interact with other experts from other academic institutions. But I don't agree, I think the interaction with the councils to promote it at that level would also be helpful. We also have no visibility whatsoever. One could probably go to the level of textures to say that the budget has not promoted. But the truth of the matter is that from where we are operating, we tend to be very downward looking. As I said, very parochial in the sense of reactive, you respond to that which has come to you. Instead of actually being proactive, tapping the market there, because there are many other entrepreneurs as well, who have got products, who actually don't know that if they're certified, it has in fact opened a new market for them for people who are away. The other element, of course, is to create what I call the push factors, which is the consumer awareness that you're actually talking about. But when you buy that product, it must be a product which has got a particular stamp, which then comes back to the question of the integrity of your own certification processes, so that when people say when they say a stamp of Agrima, it must represent something. Someone once said, if you see a star of a particular car, it actually represents something. If you see a Toyota, it keeps going right. Request for zero defect. You know, that kind of association with that particular. I think we're a long way from the chain. We're doing specialized sectors. Like, for instance, bridge joints, people who are in the bridge design, you go to Sandra, they will take any product that is certified by Agrima. Because there's a need of familiarity. But it's not a reactive number. When it's not such a challenge, we're actually going to be changing it going forward. I'd like to ask Rachel to just tell you the specific questions around the undertakings that you made. You did indicate that perhaps we need to go back to those particular ones. And there was this particular question of how do I identify the certification of that Agrima. One of the things that we must worry about is the extent to which people can copy the certificates and how fraudproof they are, you know, given the commercial claim that actually takes place over there. And the liability, of course, that may come from that particular process, and maybe Joe could just talk to that. Thanks. And let me just thank you for the opportunity again. We really appreciate the opportunity. Next time we come, we will follow up those issues. And hopefully the challenges that have been identified, we'll be talking more about how we have done and what are our experiences on those challenges. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Brajo, I'm going to give you, but my protocol is after the chair has spoken, there is no one else who speaks. But because he requested, you've got his permission to do that. What we should avoid is to raise more questions. I'm worried if you start, Chair, raising the question about the certification process that might not be foolproof, because it might just raise other issues for engagement. What he's got to respond on is really was just a reminder, not to give us a report at the stage, but if you want to comment, please go ahead, Brajo.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just respond on the two issues. The first one is the logo. Yes, the products, how does one identify approved products? They do carry an Agrima logo, which is placed on the products, which is as an identifying mark. On the question regarding SABs and how substandard products get to the market, that is a question that is quite a big question, and we are hoping that I was saying that I hope that once you do get legislation that will enable us to give us a mandate, then we will be in a position to be able, depending on the mandate that we get based on the legislation, the legislative process, then we'll be in a position to act in accordance with that current, with that mandate. But currently, the Bureau standards have their own mandate to which they test products like corrugated iron and those. And if certain, some of the products they test do not meet the standards in the market, then I think it's an issue that the Bureau standards currently covers under their current mandate. Thank you very much.
Thanks, members, and thanks. Please don't go for other questions. Ramagam, you... I'm Agama, not...
No, all I'm requesting, Chair,
yeah,
is in the next meeting, the point here is the CEO made a commitment to this committee that he would have that engagement. Now, he must come back and report on the engagement that he had.
No, I hear what you're saying. Okay. All right. Work in progress. Work in progress. I want to tell you two things. One, that we it's for the second time that when we hear there is either this type of noise or that type of noise, we just want to attend to those noises that are very irritating sometimes, and also just to strengthen the IT so that we don't come here and make excuses about things not working. It's for the first time that we encounter this here, so let's just deal with that. Members, there is an invitation, open invitation to yourselves from the Department of Public Works to be able to attend the, they say it's GAMO SO Awards, award-giving ceremony in Johannesburg at the Birchwood Hotel in Boksburg. That is next Friday on the 6th of November. You know, the year is gone already. It's taking place at 6 o'clock. So I'm just, it's an open invitation. And secondly, we have to, in the next meeting, like we're meeting next week, we're meeting with the department, as you know. We're not meeting this afternoon. Yeah, we're meeting with the department, and we're meeting in the morning and in the afternoon. My thinking was that because the following weeks we've got some time, we might just wish to do the reports and other things in the coming week, so that we just concentrate on the department in the morning. But that is an admin matter that we'll deal with. Our stress plan, you see, we are waiting for everybody to be back. Next week, all of you must be here. There is no apology accepted next week when we deal with the final engagement with the department, you see, so that we are able to firmly decide the date for the stress plan. We've got a week, that is the week of the 16th to the 20th, that is dedicated to committees. Sorry? Not anymore. But at the back. Okay. If we've taken it back, then I don't know. We'll find some other space. And these things are happening and changing very fast. Don't worry about them. They concern us here. But I was thinking that's the week that we were going to use to address the problems of Bama Sango as well, because he doesn't want to be here over weekends. You see? But next week we've got to decide that. We'll consult with you individually as well, just to check what is doable. So, the issues that we raised with the department, I think we're quite aware of the issues that we've raised, but also to come and answer to their annual report. We've dealt with all the entities reporting to them, and I've made a point that says, you see, if the department has got a qualified audit report, we cannot be too hard on the babies if the parents are misbehaving. So they've got that message, you see. But thanks to you for your clean audit. Give or take what Baba Masango picked up about what the Auditor General has said, okay? And the IDT as well. The rest have given us a lot of problems. We're just hoping for a better future. This meeting has come to an end. see you next week. And goodbye.